Hello and welcome to this week's episode of You Seem Interesting. I'm your host, Danny Rouye. As always, thank you so much for checking out the show. Special, extra special thank you to our Patreon subscribers, patreon.com/funnydanny. You guys are a hoot. You're the best, and you know you're the best. When you look in the mirror in the morning, you see a winner. So thank you very much. And if you're checking out the show on other platforms, you're more than welcome to do so. I believe in us. We're going to be on Amazon pretty soon. They got a whole music service, podcast service. And they asked me, they reached out to me. And I was like, okay, that's as much as I know to this point. I hope it happens relatively soon. We'll tell you about it, though, when it does. But Apple Pods, Spotify, Google Play, all of that good stuff. Just find You Seem Interesting, subscribe, rate, like, review, all that good stuff. We love it. This week's episode is about my friend who died. He also just released a comedy special that's available on the aforementioned Amazon Prime. He's still very much alive, but he was dead. I'll tell you all about my guest Jason Weems here in a moment. But first, it's time for the strangest gimmick in all of podcasting.
It is once again time for the strangest gimmick in all of podcasting. A moderately passable celebrity impression asking you for money.
To the former NFL tight end and current personality on the seldom watched FS1 Network, Shannon Sharp. Let me tell you this bottom line. If you're a good person, you will go to patreon.com, that's a website, /funnydanny. He's not that funny, but he has the need for the money. There's tiers, 2, 5, 10, 20, 30. That's money. Go there, give him some of that money. Thank you very much, Shannon. Wow, big honor. Really good player. And yells a lot on television. So let's get into the facts of the case. My pal Jason Weems, I'll tell you some more about it here in a moment. But on May 3rd, 2017, Jason Weems died. He was on stage in Philadelphia, and he had an asthma attack. He suffers from asthma. He had a very, very, very severe asthma attack. And he was on stage only a couple minutes into his set. He left the stage after taking his inhaler a couple times. He was very lightheaded. He went outside. At that moment, thank goodness, a physician's assistant was in the audience. She was in the crowd, knew something that was amiss, knew something was wrong. Went outside to see him, to check on him. He was woozy. He couldn't breathe. His throat had closed. He was really, really struggling. She brought him back inside, gave him some water. Next thing you know, his eyes roll back in his head. He collapses to the ground. She performs CPR for 4 minutes until paramedics arrive. They take him to the hospital. And ultimately, after being dead, clinically dead, for 5 minutes, he's brought back, ventilator, all the other things, regains consciousness, and has survived and continued his comedy journey. And he is hilarious, one of my favorite comedians. And Jason was a guy that started a couple years after kind of my crew got going in the D.C. Baltimore area. We saw him and right away knew that he was different. He's been on Last Comic Standing, was a semifinalist a couple times, has performed at the Just for Laughs Festival in Montreal, very prestigious. He now works full time as a comedian. He was a former school teacher, has a wonderful family, and he is brilliant. He is so, so, so funny. He's got a little bit of Chappelle to him and his delivery. You know how, like, if you're watching Chappelle, and Chappelle, he just sort of like this, I say, whatever. He's got some of that, too, to his delivery, where almost anything Dave Chappelle says is funny. And Dave is in on the joke himself. And that when Dave Chappelle laughs at his own humor, Jason has a little bit of that quality as well. And Jason's great. He is super, super funny. And his special is called Unknown, and it's available right now as you're listening to this on Amazon Prime. Highly recommend checking it out. But Jason suffers from asthma. And each day, 10 Americans on average die from asthma. And in 2017, the most recent numbers I could find, almost 3,600 people died as a result of asthma. Many of these deaths are avoidable with proper treatment and care. And adults are 4 times more likely to die from asthma than our children. And women are more likely to die from asthma attacks than men. And boys are more likely to die than girls. And African Americans are 3 times more likely to die from asthma overall. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the old CDC, approximately 1 in 13 people in America, I didn't know it was this high, that's way higher than I would have thought, have asthma. That means more than 25 million Americans live every day with asthma. And asthma is really scary. It's that occasionally your breathing tubes swell up and swell shut, and you're unable to breathe. Imagine that sort of that feeling of panic and drowning while you're out there in the open air and you can't really explain to folks what's going on. And folks that have asthma suffer from that. They also suffer from the anxiety and fear that comes potentially with an attack hitting. And it's treatable. There's no cure for asthma, but it is a treatable condition where you can manage it. But yet it's something that I can imagine, or I can only imagine how terrifying it is at times to live with this in the back of your mind. And asthma has actually been increasing since the early 1980s in all age, sex, and racial groups. Asthma is more common in adult women than it is in adult men. As we look into what happened to Jason, this is actually a fairly unique case when it comes to it actually getting to the point that it's this far. So as I was doing research, it turns out that what actually happened to Jason is fairly rare. Most recent study I could find, over the span of almost 15 years, asthma was basically linked to the primary cause of cardiac arrest in only 1.6% of patients as part of this study. So usually a little bit less than 2% of the time. That's the reason why someone goes into cardiac arrest. Cardiac arrest numbers in the United States are pretty staggering. Over 350,000 cardiac arrests occur per year outside the hospital. So people just living their lives, going about their days in the home, out in public, etc., right? Survival rate, if CPR is administered quickly, triples. So if somebody goes into cardiac arrest, if they receive CPR in a timely manner, from a good Samaritan, from, in Jason's case, someone with medical training who happened to be right there on the scene, the survival rate triples. Nearly 45% of out-of-hospital cardiac arrests survive. A little less than 20% of cardiac arrest incidents occur out in public. So Jason was part of that group. And what happened to him is, I can't even imagine how scary it was. And his circumstances are part of a very minute percentage of what ends up happening to folks outside of the home in terms of asthma, cardiac arrest, someone being on the scene to save their lives, and of course, being dead for about 5 minutes. I know that was a ton of numbers. Let's forget about those for a second and enjoy my conversation with my pal, comedian Jason Weems. Fun guest this week. I don't just say that because I like talking to him and he's a buddy, but he's one of the funniest people I have ever met in my entire life. My pal Jason Weems is with me on UCM Interesting. Jason, what's up, dude?
What's up, Danny? How you doing, brother?
I'm doing all right, my friend. Not as well as you. First of all, congratulations. Tell folks about the special. Just how did it come about? Is this kind of the pinnacle of your work, or is just sort of time? Hey, I had enough backlog of material. Let me get something on tape. Tell folks about it.
The special is called Unknown. You can stream it right now on Amazon Prime. You can listen to the album version of it anywhere. You can get albums. So iTunes, SiriusXM is playing. It's on Pandora. Pretty much anywhere you can get something, it's there. The special is called Unknown. And the reason that that title kind of jumped out was May 3rd, 2017, I died. Actually, while doing stand-up comedy. I mean, you typically hear the term of, you know, comics dying on stage. You right. think you know, they just didn't get laughs. But, you know, it was the clinical term. And I'd gone to a show in Philly. I was supposed to close off the show that night. You know, I was supposed to do 45 to 60. I may be 3 minutes into the set, and I can feel this attack coming. You know, I've fought asthma my entire life. I can typically tell when it's, you know, one that's going to be really aggressive or one that might just be, you know, a little bit of a tickle. This one felt like it was a monster. Being the comic that I am and just the type of person that I am with the work ethic, it was, you know, I'm not getting off the stage. So I, like a dumbass, kept trying to talk through, you know, this attack that I felt coming on, which I'm sure made it even worse. At one point, you know, I, you know, kind of told the crowd, you know, just, you know, talk amongst yourselves for a second. They're laughing about that. I had a good, you know, energy and riff going on in the room. I took my inhaler on stage, hoping that would kind of ease things up, and it didn't. Then I just dropped the mic and just made a beeline for the door. Went outside, you know, trying to get some fresh air. Nothing's helping. I'm basically emptying in the inhaler at this point, just puffing it like crazy. By the grace of God, there was a doctor who was in the crowd that night, like it's on some real like movie sitcom type stuff. Mm-hmm. She helped me back inside. I ended up coding in the venue, didn't have a heartbeat or pulse for 5 minutes. And then when I woke up in the Philadelphia hospital 16 hours later, they had me listed as unknown. So the title literally comes from that. But then it also speaks to, you know, the fact of, you know, I've had some success in my career in the time that I've been doing stand-up, but I'm still not the type of household name that I would like to be. So it speaks to, you know, unknown in that sense. And then it's also, if you look at the special, a very prominent feature of the special is this, you know, huge Baltimore bench that, you know, they sit on the bus stops here where it says the greatest city in America. That's like the whole set. It's, you know, it's me, it's that bench. And it's like, you know, it's a shout out to my city. It's, you know, as much as people give Baltimore shit about, you know, The Wire and, you know, drugs and, you know, everything that every other major city has, all of my experiences here have been amazing. You know, this is where I call home. This is where I grew up. This is where I learned, you know, who to be, you know, how to be the man that I am now. You know, we have a great life here and, you know, a lot of great talented artists here in the city. So, but it's unknown in that regard. So it's kind of a trifold, the meaning behind the title, but it was something that was very personal. And it was, you know, as a comic, when something happens, anything happens in our lives, we try to find a way to take it to the stage. And especially if it's something that can kind of separate you from other people. If it's, you know, a story that nobody else has or can tell the way that you tell, obviously that's something that you like to try to approach. And that's, you know, I was gonna, I hope I don't die again. But you know,
Double Unknown, the album too. The story is incredible. And I remember what I was doing May 3rd, 2017. I looked it up and I texted like a complaint to my wife about like the kind of LaCroix or something. And I was like hoping for pamplemousse that time. You know what I mean? Just it puts, right. I hate that phrase. It puts stuff in perspective, but it did. We almost, our stand-up community here in this area almost lost, you know, one of our greats and a guy that everybody likes. So you led me to some of my questions here. I was going to jump into it that way. Have you ever had an attack like that previously? And then, you know, sort of were able to get out of it. I can't imagine having that happen on stage and then sort of the compounding pressures of entertaining folks, as you kind of talked about, probably do things to escalate that. Had you ever had an attack like that before?
I have had those severe attacks. Oddly enough, the comic who booked the show that I was doing that night in Philly, a comic named Michelle Balloon, I had met her probably maybe 6 to 8 months previous. So that was May. I met her probably in September. I met her in LA. I was out there for a week pitching a show and doing some stand-up. You know, we're in the green room talking, and then I'm like, you know, I'm from Baltimore. And she's like, oh, I live in Philly. And she's like, I got this show. You got to come do it. And I'm like, okay, cool. And then we settled on the May date, and that's where I died. I had an attack in L.A. that week when I met her.
Oh.
It was the first night I was out there. I was, like, doing, like, a Sunday through a Saturday, like, a whole stretch. And I had a Sunday night show at some spot, and I went in. You know, I'm the new comic. Nobody knows who I am. I go up, had a great set, which always feels great when you're a comic from, you know, a different city. Mm-hmm. Then I walked over to the bar area, and when I was sitting watching the rest of the show, an attack that was, it was not as aggressive as the one that happened in Philly, but it was very similar. And it was very scary one. I jumped in my car. I didn't know where I was. You know, I'm in some part of, you know, L.A. Just threw in, you know, hospitals and the GPS. It was one that was like 15 minutes away. And, you know, I just started driving. So I'm on this highway having a severe asthma attack, just trying to follow these directions. I remember pulling up in the emergency room lot of this hospital. And just, you know, just jumped out the car. I was parked like sideways. I'm running their emergency. And I ran in an emergency room. And I remember running up to like the triage area and saying, you know, I need to get to the back. And they're trying to ask me for all this insurance information. And I'm like, no, I need somebody to do something right now. So I remember I busted past like the little security area. And the security guy came out and grabbed me, kind of dragged me back a little bit.
Oh.
And I'm having this attack. And then finally a nurse came out and saw that I was really in distress and grabbed me and kind of took me back. So I was in that hospital for a little bit, a couple of hours. I mean, I still had this whole week finished to finish out in L.A. And it was like all these meetings that I couldn't cancel. So like I was like scared shitless. I'm sitting in this hotel room and like I'm scared to go out. So I would only leave to go to do the shows or to do the meetings. Mm-hmm. Other than that, I would like to like sit in like this dark hotel room, like drinking water and like praying.
That's a great image. That's beautiful. What's the last thing you remember from that night on May 3rd before waking up in the hospital thinking, I got to get the hell out of here? What's the last moment that you go, oh, I was Jason Weems still in that moment?
I remember the doctor when I went outside to the sidewalk to try to get some fresh air. I started to lose consciousness, I guess, at some of that moment. I remember feeling like extremely woozy. Mm-hmm. I remember being on my knees. And then I remember hearing, it felt like a movie. I remember hearing somebody over my shoulder, literally. And she was talking, and it was the woman who saved me. And she was saying, you know, hey, I'm a doctor. And she was asking all these questions, but it sounded like I was underwater. Like,
right.
It was like kind of real, kind of distorted. Then I remember a bunch of like just hands touching me and like kind of like felt like they were like pushing me. I guess they were probably kind of guiding me inside of the venue. And then I vaguely remember sitting down and someone saying, where's a plug? Because they were trying to plug up. I have a nebulizer that I travel with in one of my bags. And they were trying to plug it up and get the medicine in it. And I remember hearing somebody say, where's the plug? And that was the last thing I heard.
Where's the plug? What are you going to put in me? Yeah.
So, and then from what I'm told at that point, I collapsed. I think they tried to catch me and missed. So I need to talk to somebody about that immediately. So they missed me. I hit my head and then I coded. And from what I'm told, they said I literally like just the color left my body.
Wow.
And people were, you know, freaking out and trying to figure out what to do. And then the doctor, she did chest compressions, even though she told me I've spoken to her since. And she said that, you know, after the first minute and a half, when she didn't see any signs of any life, that she didn't even think I was going to make it. The only reason she kept doing the chest compression is she's like, that's just what she's medically trained to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's a hero, by the way. And I don't want that to get lost. I mean, I remember we all hear the story. I mean, it gets posted on social media. Does anyone know Jason Weems? And the word travels super fast, and we're all scared to death, and we don't know what's going on. And I can't imagine your family and what they were going through in that moment. But what I don't want to get lost in this entire saga is that she is a hero. So I was going to ask, have you had contact with her? By the grace of God, she was in the audience?
We have. So we've spoken, I've mailed her a very heartfelt card, and we're friends on social media, and we like each other's posts and, you know, jump in each other's comments from time to time. You know, she's literally become, you know, somebody who I see her face pop up under random things. it's an amazing feeling, because it's one of those things of like you just never know when you're going to need somebody and how quickly tables can turn. Like it was, you know, just moments before that, I was in control of that room. You know, I'm the guy, I'm the focal point. Everyone's looking at me. You know, I've got the room up in laughter. Everyone's, you know, looking to me for all of their needs at that moment, because, you know, they're here for a comedy show. Mm-hmm. But within a matter of moments, you know, now I'm dying on the ground and nobody gives a fuck about these jokes.
Well, speaking of jokes, Jason, your pals, when they catch wind of it, Teresa and Haywood, and everybody's doing everything they possibly can to, you know, to get word out. And then subsequently, they organize a benefit show for you. And I was totally fine that they didn't ask me to perform at all. But seriously, it was something that, of course, we were all going to go to and contribute to. What did that mean to you?
It was amazing, man, because it was one of these things of, you know how you feel like people view you, you know, how they may, you know, look at up to you or at you, or how they view you within a certain community. But I don't think you really know it until something like that happens and it's really put to a test. So, I mean, none of that had to happen. You know, nobody had to you know, organize it. Nobody had to donate their time, you know, their talent, you know, the venue, any of it. So all of it, you know, to try to help out, you know, comedy, you know, speaking to, you know, one of my own right now, you know, it's a brotherhood, it's a fraternity or a sorority or it's a group of motherfuckers. I mean, I think you really do try to look out for people as much as possible. So it really warmed my heart because I feel like I've done a lot for the scene, not in a bragging type way, but you know, I try to, you know, shine light on this area. I try to, when I get opportunities, I try to bring more opportunities back to this area. It was very humbling for folks to come out and kind of support me like that.
And it was a heck of a night. It was a lot of fun. It was something that I think to all it took was for you to die for 5 minutes or people to show you and be nice to you. You know, that
was some goddamn respect.
Yeah, I know, right? Okay, we almost lost Jason. We should probably help him out. No, but so go through your journey. You started a couple years after kind of my class of guys with, like, you know, Roy Scovel and me and Jeff Maurer and Seton Smith, Ryan Connor. Everybody's doing well. But we knew right away that you were different, and it was obvious, and you know, just kind of go through your sort of evolution now, where you get to the point you were a semifinalist and a last comic standing, and were outstanding in that capacity, and have always done well for yourself, as you alluded to. Where is this in terms of your journey and your growth?
Before I answer your question, how did you guys see me when I first started? Because that will help me frame up, in what context, how I felt about myself.
So I'll give you the answer. God damn it. That's what it was, right? Because what we sucked for years and didn't know that we sucked. We're just wandering around. My first 2 years, I alternated between doing Brian Regan and Mitch Hedberg style jokes, and I was terrible. Uh-huh. I didn't, nobody told me I was terrible, but the guys that were older than us or had been doing it for longer than us just hated me behind my back instead of, like, kind of in person. And so right away, by the first time we'd seen you, you could just tell that what you were doing was different than the normal first year, second year, whatever kind of comic. So we knew right away that you were different. It's like watching up, you know, a great athlete that hasn't necessarily played the sport yet, but he picks it up and is good at it. That's how everybody felt.
Okay. And I guess I couldn't feel it because I was inside of myself. But to me, I always felt like the first year or two, to me, I felt awkward. I felt off balance. I felt like I felt like it was a missing something. And as much as people said that it was good, I never could really accept that. And some of that was just drive, because I really wanted to be good and I really wanted to put in that work to kind of turn that corner. But I mean, early on, it was a thing of, I was always in love with stand up. I kind of caught wind of it, kind of really kind of fell in love with it, kind of probably late high school. But then it wasn't like, you know, I could just tell my parents, you know, I did tell my parents I wanted to be a stand-up comedian. let's put this shit on the record.
Yeah, there we go. I couldn't believe the look on their faces when I said that's what I wanted to do. I mean, I was supposed to go to law school, dude. You wouldn't believe. You want to talk about disappointment? Yes. I was supposed to finish my dumb baseball career, get a job for a little bit, take the LSAT, and go to law school. Crushed. Devastated is what they were.
I'm sure it's worked out now, though.
Yeah.
It just takes a little bit of time,
right?
So, yeah, I kind of wanted to do it then, but then my parents were like, you know, go to college. I went to Morgan State University here in Baltimore, where I actually met a guy who was doing comedy for real. And he had thrown a show here in Baltimore. And the first time I did it, it was my junior year of high school, of college. And I bombed terribly. Like, it was, like, really bad. And I went in there and I told this joke, and it was right when, like, Training Day was out with Denzel Washington.
Uh-huh.
And I went up there, and this was like a hood show. This was like it. This was in front of the high school where when the riots happened with Freddie Gray, and they showed everybody throwing rocks outside that mall. I don't know if you can remember the footage of that.
Sure, sure.
It was a high school there. That's where the show was.
It was there.
I was in there. And I came out there and I told this joke and I was like, man, y'all seen Training Day? And they was like, yeah. And I was like, wouldn't it be crazy if Little Bow Wow was in Training Day? Then they was like, yeah. And I was like, it'd be called Potty Training Day. And I, yo, and I thought.
I would have laughed my ass off. That's perfect.
I thought
perfect.
That shit was going to destroy. I thought it was the strongest joke that anybody had ever heard.
That's it.
And no one laughed. And, you know, it shook me to my core.
Yeah.
And I said goodnight and I walked off stage and then ended up going back out a couple of minutes later and doing the same exact joke.
You ran it back because it was them, not you. Oh,
yeah.
That's so funny. That's so funny.
But then I didn't do stand up for like probably 6 years. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was maybe, I guess I was 20. I didn't start again until I was almost 26. So September 27th of 2006, I drove from Baltimore over to Virginia, Arlington, Clarendon Barn Grill. Mm-hmm. And Casey Wade was booking this show and she put me up and I did like 3 minutes and I felt like it was terrible. But I met a couple of folks that night. I think I met Aparna the first night I did it. Mm-hmm. And I think Tim Miller may have been there. I feel like Seton was there. Kojo Monte. I mean, it was some heavy hitters. You know, we come from good stock.
Yeah.
You know, I met a couple of folks that, you know, said I was funny and, you know, vouched for me at a next mic. And then it kind of turned into that. Then it kind of turned into like an incessant need. I felt like I wasted so much time, like from like 20 to damn near 26. You know, I was kind of sitting on the sideline thinking about it, kind of, you know, licking my wounds from, you know, that horrible Training Day incident.
The potty training day incident.
The potty training day incident. I literally every night I was teaching school at the time, kindergarten. And every day I would get off from school in Baltimore, say, you know, 3-something, 4. And I would drive to D.C. or Virginia and try to get as many mics in a night as possible and then drive back. And I did that 7 nights a week for, I mean, years. Until I had kids. And then that was a whole complete game changer. That completely changed my style in the sense of, I don't really write jokes in the traditional sense of, you know, pen to paper or have a real structure. I typically kind of stumble upon them. The ones I tend to write down never really work. Most of the shit that happens for me just really does happen organically on stage, or in moments in life that then I kind of recreate on stage. But the more I write something out, for me at least, comedically, for stand-up wise, it kind of becomes too scripted.
Mm-hmm.
And I need to be real loose. But when my kids were born, I had just filmed my first hour, which was called Intellectual Property, which we were going to try to pitch to some folks, but the audio people jacked up the sound during the recording. And it was always like there was like this little buzz that they couldn't fix.
Oh.
And it was just something that just couldn't be sold. But we pushed it straight to DVD. And it was just something I just sold to people at the shows. Mm-hmm. Cause at least, you know, once they give me the money, I'll be far gone.
It's probably your DVD player. That's why there's the buzz on
right.
there.
By the time they discover the buzz, oh, I'll be far gone.
That's amazing.
I did that show. I did that show 2010. And then literally probably 4 or 5 days after we filmed that first show, found out we were pregnant with my first son. And then, you know, focus completely shifted. When he was born, it was like he was the most amazing thing in the world. And I didn't want to leave the house. So, you know, people were hitting me to do shows. But I was like, you know, I'm not coming out. When I finally did start taking shows, I didn't want to come out and do the same hour that I had just recorded.
Mm-hmm.
So it just turned into straight riffing on stage. where it turned into I was doing, you know, 30 minutes to 40 minutes of just crowd work and just, you know, just talking shit. And it was hitting so hard that it was hard to transition back into regular jokes. So that was kind of like a period, you know, say 2011 up until, you know, now. And then just so much had changed for me, you know. Mm-hmm. I've become a father, I've become a husband. Then I died. So all of those kind of experiences compounded was like, I've got to put this into a special. When all that happened, it was like, you know, this has to become a thing, and then end up becoming unknown. So
that's awesome. So is it, that's what I was going to ask you, kind of cart before the horse. Is it, do you go, I'm making a special, let's open up the bidding for it? Or are you talking to Amazon first to say, hey, this is my idea for a special? Give me the sequence there.
Right. No. So this was one of the things of, I just wanted to put this piece of art into the world. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I wanted it to be distributed widely. So the goal was always to have it, you know, on a major platform. But starting out, it was no distribution deal. This was completely self-funded. I mean, like checking accounts, like. I like to work that way just because I really like to see my vision from, you know, start to finish. And when you control the money, you know, you control the vision. So it was one of those situations. So the artwork's the exact way that I wanted it to be. You know, I chose the venue where I wanted to shoot it. You know, the film crew that I wanted to do, you know, the filming for it. You know, the audio technicians. Everybody from, I mean, every single portion of this special is, you know, completely handpicked. You know, all Baltimore creatives, completely, you know, black creative crew from, I mean, every aspect of the project. So it let a lot of folks eat. It put a lot of people's talents under a spotlight. And, you know, now they're, you know, getting more work and, you know, more looks for other projects. So it was just one of these things of, I had the idea. I knew I wanted to tell the story. I wasn't sure how I wanted to tell it. When I first woke up in the hospital in Philly, that was actually one of the first feelings I had. I had like some randomly funny thoughts about it. And I still had a tube down my throat where it was breathing for me. I still had hand and hand restraints.
Wow.
Because I woke up in a CT scan and beat up a nurse named Brenda.
I'm sorry. I shouldn't be laughing, but it's so funny. Poor Brenda. Brenda's just minding her business.
She's minding her business. Just a regular ass day. Caught these hands. Where was I? I woke up, beat Brenda's ass up.
Woke up, beat up Brenda.
So I'd jotted down just some ideas. I mean, and I think that's just the way I think I can't speak for all comics, but I know I process even like weird stuff, like tragic things. A lot of times, even in the midst of the tragedy, I can kind of see some of the funny aspects of it. It might not be completely flushed out, or I might not even be really ready to confront it completely. Because I know I wasn't with the death stuff. Even with the filming of the show, you know, in the year leading up to it, as I was trying to form it, it was really kind of a struggle trying to make it funny in the way that I wanted to present it. I mean, because a lot of it's just tragedy. It was certain spots, you know, that kind of lended itself to comedy more easily. But, you know, some parts, you know, felt kind of heavy to lift. So, you know, you're trying to recreate this story for the audience. You're trying to give them all the necessary information so they can follow you. So it's a lot to kind of try to you know download to a crowd to get them to really, you know, invest in it. So the whole time I was very tentative, even leading up the night of the special. I was so scared getting to that last, because it's pretty much the last 20 minutes of the set. Mm-hmm. is really when I dive into the death material, and it's just, I never felt 100% confident with it. You know, I never felt like an extension of me where I could, like, you know how, like, you want your sword to feel like, you know, it's a part of your arm. Mm-hmm. I never felt like I really had it, because it was still uncomfortable, because it was one of these things of the trauma of it. I think life kept moving so fast after, and I had to come home from the hospital. You know, you don't get a break from being daddy. You don't get a break from, so it's, you know, you can't hide from your kids in the room for weeks to try to figure out how you feel about you dying and how that, you know, what that did to you, you know, mentally. So I was kind of working through all of these things in real time. You know, I was going through therapy because I had, you know, anxiety of returning back to the stage.
Sure, yeah.
I had anxiety of, you know, all of these things. But I knew I couldn't, you know, just crawl up and just let this be the end of it. So I felt like making a special about the thing that I'm now terrified about was kind of like a courageous thing to do and kind of a way to kind of give a middle finger to death.
Dude, it's how Bruce Wayne became Batman, man. You know, like, that's exactly what you do.
It's the exact same story.
Well, dude, congrats on the special. All your success, well-earned, well-deserved. And I'm hoping this adds to another great and illustrious chapter in Beige history, right up next to Steph Curry, right up next to the second Aunt Viv. I want that special up there as well. Jason, thanks for joining me, man. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Danny. I appreciate you, brother.
Thank you to my guest, Jason Weems, for joining me. Frank conversation, really fun conversation as well about a really serious topic, but he is awesome. Go check out his special. It's called Unknown, streaming right now on Amazon Prime. You can find it, download it, watch it. It is hysterical. He is great. He's a lot of fun. And JasonWeemsComedy.com is his website. So go check out all that he has to offer. Really funny guy. And it's, I loved his answers on pretty much everything, but it's something that, that comics are always fascinated about with each other. And I imagine other artists of the same type, whether you paint, whether you know, you play the guitar or you write songs, whatever it is, we're always interested in each other's processes, if that's even the right word. You know, whether it's how you come up with something or how you go from, you know what I should probably do is spend a bunch of my own money, videotape what I'm doing with a bunch of cameras, and then pitch it to a streaming service, right? Just to see what you can get done. And comics are always sort of interested in how you write, how you develop your jokes and your material, where it comes from, how you cultivate that, the rhythm you're in, and the like. And Jason's always forthcoming and really great on those kind of things. He's very introspective about his own process. And you could tell, I mean, think about how scary those moments are. And it's not intuitive for most people to mine those moments for humor. And yet the last 20, 25 minutes of his special are from probably the scariest moment of his life, right? It's pretty amazing that somebody can do that. And I think that you could tell how really and truly a comic at his core Jason is, both, A, because he's so funny. I mean, just the stuff he does, just the way he talks makes people laugh, myself included. I've always found everything he said hilarious. But the angles that you see as a comedian, the angles that he feels in some of those dire moments, A, as soon as he's out of threat, as soon as he's out of the, I'm immediately concerned for my life and the life of those around me, it's immediately, how can I make this funny? How, where are the jokes here? You just got to be wired differently, you know, to think in the way that somebody like Jason does. The most terrifying moment, presumably, of his life, right? This is his quote in the Washington Post shortly after the incident. I woke up and one of my first thoughts was, I need to get the F out of this hospital. Just put a blanket on me and roll me out like Tupac. I know this dying S got to be expensive. He's different. And I mean that in the best possible way. Just a hilarious guy through and through. Always really fun catching up with him and you know, hearing about his process. And his story is unbelievable. And this is, you know, you have these things happen in your life, whether they're near misses or somebody close to you or a friend of a friend. Something will happen and it kind of is a stark reminder and something sticks with you. CPR stuck with me after that. Because again, I was living a very, you know, comfortably. I was whining or complaining to my wife about something that was minuscule and stupid. And we all start to get, you know, we're texting back and forth, a group of us friends from all across the country going, hey, did you hear about this? Wait, what happened? What's true? He's dead. Is he alive? What's going on? People are posting things on Facebook and Twitter. And the word just sort of travels like light speed at this point in this day and age. we finally find out that he's alive, that he's okay, and it's thanks to this hero. It's thanks to this lady that happened to be there and happened to know the warning signs and perform CPR on my friend Jason Weems as to why he is still alive and kicking. It's why he's still a great dad, a great husband, a great comedian, and a great guest on You Seem Interesting. So that lady is a hero, and I'm glad they've stayed in touch. But it just reminds me that we can all be heroes. And I hate to sound corny, I hate to sound cheesy about it, but do your best. You perform CPR. If you're out and about, you see it happen in public. It happens tens of thousands of times a year out there in public. And hoping you're listening to this in non-COVID times. I don't know how you're supposed to do it with a mask on, but bear with me. You could save somebody's life, just like this lady did several years ago. And she gave us back our friend. And that's something that we will all be indebted to her for. So with all that said, appreciate you guys checking out this show. We are at interest_pod on Twitter. We've got some fun guests coming up in the coming weeks. Patreon.com/FunnyDanny. Thank you as well to my producer, Andrew Russell of Kiwanda Sound. And until next time, all of you, yes, all of you guys, you seem interesting too.